we can get the computer. We have talked through, and I know this just drives people crazy, when I keep repeating myself. Why do I repeat myself? Probably because I want you to learn something. We have had the thesis. We have had the antithesis. He has talked about whether people, God is able to judge. He's talked about
the big if.
If you're a Jew, aren't you okay? Well, no. Why? Because you don't keep the law. Who's justified? He's already said it in chapter 2. Who's justified? The one who keeps the law. The Jews are going, we keep the law, Paul. He says, no, you don't. Let me give you an example. Now, did he write this entire letter to talk about the example of circumcision?
No.
It's an example of his argument that the Jews and the Gentiles are made righteous by keeping the law. Same issue, that the Jews don't keep the law. Why circumcision?
They have to keep it.
Part of the covenant that God gave Abraham way back sometime. Genesis 17, if you want to look for it. The law actually didn't show up for like 800 years later. So circumcision actually predates the law. But here's the question. The law says, don't work on the Sabbath. Circumcision says a person has to be a male, which women didn't have a word of, a young male has to be circumcised 8 days after his birth. And that would be fine if they were never born on Friday. Just can't have a child on Friday, it would be fine. But any male born on Friday would have to be circumcised on the Sabbath. Now, which one are they going to do? Keep the Sabbath or keep circumcision? It's a paradox, isn't it? Paul uses this to say, you know what? You don't keep the law 100% of the time. And you violate the law frequently. You cannot be justified by keeping the law. That's his main point. You cannot be justified by keeping the law. So, now, he's done something which has made the Israelites upset. Because he said, you know what? You're no different than Gentiles. And that upsets a lot of people. When you look down on someone, and somebody comes along and tells you you're no different than the person you look down on, it creates a little bit of an emotional response in you. So, the Greek and the Jew maintain this equal standing. They're judged on the basis of deeds. That's all of chapter 2. All of chapter 2. What? God judges on the basis of deeds. For the one who does good things, eternal life. For the one who doesn't, wrath and fury. So, who does good things? Nobody. No Jew, no Gentile. He's trying to get this point. The wrath of God has been revealed. Why? Because idolatry exists. That's proof. Idolatry results in impurity, impurity, and it gives lots of examples of that. We'll practice idolatry, okay? But you violate the law. And the only one who can be receive eternal life is one who keeps the law. 100% of the time, 100% of the law, you violate it once, you're out. So you have God's wrath and fury because you violate the law. It's not based on social position. Most of you grew up in America where we're supposed to not have social classes. Is that right? That's why there's people who drive limousines and get special privileges and get to go to diners and not pay. Get to go to the front of the line. We don't have any social positions in America. You need to open your eyes. We do. Most people think if you're white, upper class, you get ahead. Is that true? Sometimes they're treated that way. If you have a good education, you're treated better? Or does it really only matter if your daddy has money? What's the case? See, America is filled with social conditions. We judge on the basis of social conditions. And, exegetically speaking, so did the ancient world. They had a very strong class system. And there were certain people who were just supposed to get ahead because they had the right DNA. Paul says, DNA don't get you anywhere. You're judged on the basis of your deeds. So, he now engages in a series of questions because this is diatribe, this type of rhetoric. Well, what advantages did you have? Is there any value in circumcision? When he talks about circumcision, he's talking about a requirement to be Jewish. A requirement for the males to be Jewish, to be part of this group, to be the in group. You have to do this. It's a good thing we don't have those requirements anymore. You can be part of a group without doing something strange, like shake your head, or commit a crime, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's always been, to be part of a group, you have to do something that makes you part of the group, even if it's only wearing the right shirt on the right day so that you're part of that group.
Serious?
Serious, yes. Isn't that good? I must have been asleep when I got that. Thank you. I can correct it. I don't see every error. See? I'm not perfect. Okay? So, does Jew have any advantage? He says, yes. They have a great advantage. Do you have an advantage because you got to graduate high school? Yes. Do you have an advantage because you were not verbally abused as a child? Yes. Do you have an advantage that you have two hands and two feet? Well, yes. People who don't have two hands or two feet have a disadvantage. People who are verbally abused as a child have a disadvantage. The Jews have an advantage. They had good things. These good things should have made them more prepared to do good things. It says, you were entrusted with God's words, the oracles of God. Lovely word, O-R-A-C-L-E-S. It was used a long time before it became a large company dealing with databases. Right? An oracle that God's speak. Ancient world, God's spoke a lot. Modern world, God's speak much. People go to some temple because the God who resides at that temple is going to speak to them? No, not at all. So hermeneutically, this makes no sense to us. Exegetically, it makes perfect sense. When did God speak to Israel? Exodus chapter 20, God spoke, thou shalt not. Ten Commandments recorded as the voice of God speaking to Israel. They are the recipients of the oracles of God. So there's another question. Well, what if some of us are unfaithful? Does that nullify the faithfulness of God? Question. Fits today's little discussion earlier. What if some of you don't follow directions? Does that mean I'm going to grade the papers for everyone as if everyone had not followed directions? Well, no. Can God's faithfulness be nullified? That's the question. And that's the stupid question. Because God's faithfulness cannot be nullified. And he makes a statement. He says, by no means. Although everyone is a liar. He's pretty emotional about this. Let God be proved true. And then he quotes. Quotes the Old Testament. Who's he talking to when he quotes the Old Testament? The Jews. What type of rhetoric is he using when he quotes the Old Testament?
Midrash.
Right? He quotes the Old Testament. God is true. Is God unjust to inflict wrath on us. See? What's Paul been talking about from 1:18 through this section? The wrath of God is revealed. Is it? Is it? Hermeneutically speaking, today, most people don't think God's wrath has been revealed. Because they have a vision of what God's wrath is. He's going to come and obliterate a bunch of people, Ms. Craig. Like a mythological Greek god up on high is going to throw down a thunderbolt. Wipe out an entire nation. That's the wrath of God. Is that what Paul thinks the wrath of God is? No. The wrath of God is just handing them over. Is God unjust because he hands people over to suffer the consequences of their rebellion? Does that make God unjust? Now here's the real question. What's that word unjust? It's unrighteous. Can God be both righteous and unrighteous at the same time? Well, no, he can't. So it's a stupid question. To use the phrase, one of my favorite scenes from a movie, my cousin Benny, it's a bogus question. When you ask something that's totally impossible, God cannot be unjust. And so Paul responds in the same way. He says, by no means. The fun part about reading Romans is it's just words. By no means. There's very little emotion attached to Romans. By no means. Is that right? Is Paul writing with a lack of emotion? Is this something that he's just concerned about from a mental state? That his entire being is not tied up in this concept? He's been going around the Mediterranean for 12 years, carrying a sign, the end is coming. The end is coming. Just kind of walking around. Non-connected to the message of the plane. What do you think? So it says, is God unjust? By no means. Is that it? Or is it? By no means! It's bogus! What are you doing asking that question? Which one is it? Is just kind of some stoic guy who's not emotional about anything? Or is he passionate about it? You've read it. What do you think? Passionless or passionate? It's very important. If he had no passion, he'd probably given up the first time he got thrown in jail. Or stoned. Or a host of other things that happened to him. And now he says, if this is the case, if you think I've been saying all over the Mediterranean that we ought to just give up on the law and God shouldn't do this, then why am I still being condemned as a sinner? You know, we talked about that reputation of Paul. You think people said bad things about Paul? Well, right here, we would assume that he is not lying, but people are saying Paul's a sinner. Well, whatever that term means in the ancient world, it's a little different than the modern world. But in the ancient world, basically, it was used about people who didn't keep the law. Why do people accuse me, Paul, of not keeping the law? He kept the law. In fact, he's going to leave Corinth shortly after writing this letter in the year 58, and travel to where? Jerusalem. And when he gets to Jerusalem, he's going to do what every Jew is supposed to do. In fact, he's even taking a special vow called the Nazarenic vow before he goes there to prepare himself to go to the temple. If he doesn't keep the law, why does he go through those troubles? So people are saying Paul didn't keep the law. Why? Because he associates with the Gentiles. And the Jews are supposed to keep apart from the Gentiles. Why am I still being slandered? If I am going around saying such stupid things, why do I have problems? Because Paul is trying to challenge the thought process of his generation. And anytime you try to challenge the thought process of a group of people, they get upset. It's reflected here. So, now we come to another section, still under the antithesis. Humanity is under sin's power. What? Are we any better off? It's a lovely thing to translate. You can read all about it. It says, no. Jews aren't any better off. That's the whole problem. When you think you're better off because you have something. Jews aren't any better than the Gentiles. Why? Well, who's he writing to at this point? Probably the Jews. He says, we're all under the power of sin. Well, what's that mean? What's that mean? And if you're a Jew and you've lived your whole life saying, I'm not at a disadvantage, I'm actually pretty good, I'm upper crust. I've got things that other people don't. And Paul says, no, you don't. Prove it to me, Paul. Right? Prove it to me. Okay, you want me to prove it? As it is written, where's he going to quote from? The Old Testament, the Torah. It's a very complicated section. You can write all sorts of stuff about it. It's called a ketina, meaning a chain of quotations. People argue about how they ever fit together. That's a whole lot of more than we actually need to know about. But what does he say? Their throats are like opened graves. Anybody have been around an open grave? Not like they have then, because they didn't have nice little vaults and nice little multi-thousand-dollar coffins that were padded with cushions and everything. It was a rotting flesh, kind of like walking up on the side of a lake and there's a dead fish somewhere. Only there's 20 of them, and so the stink is really bad and the wind is blowing straight at you. You can't get away from it. Or even better, driving down one of Wichita's famous roads and having a skunk in the middle. And you got your window wide open. Isn't that lovely? That's what their throats are like. Their venom of vipers is under their lips. What's the venom of vipers? It's poison. It's under their lips. Their feet are swift to shed blood, ruin and misery in their paths. They have not known the way of peace, and there's no fear of God in their eyes. He quotes. You don't believe me? Well, listen to what you say is true. Listen to the law. All humanity is under sin's power. That's the problem. Now, some people would say we have a problem with that. Why do we have a problem with that? Because we have this thing about linear rhetoric, linear arguments. And he just said over here, you can be justified if you keep the law, and now here he says nobody's justified. Paul just contradicted himself. People say that all the time. Why? Because they think Paul's making point after point after point after point after point, and every previous point has to agree with the point before it. Is that right? Well, no. He gives a thesis, he then gives an antithesis, the antithesis is all wrong, and now it comes back to the thesis. And yes, you can be justified if you keep the law. It is possible. The problem is nobody can do it. All humanity is under sin's power. The wrath of God is revealed against Gentile and Jew.
all of them. So is that why he's writing Romans, to tell everybody how bad they are?
If you listen to most of the people talk about Romans,
yeah.
Because they don't understand Romans. In fact, that's the total opposite of what Paul is trying to say. No humans justify. Really, pretty bad place to be in. Good thing we have class on Wednesday so we can get to some good information. So like this is a couple days behind our lecture. Just keep bringing the notes and we'll be in good shape. Okay. So we'll see you on Wednesday. If you have not yet turned in a paper copy or electronic version, it's still open. Please get those turned in.
Lecture should.